Hi everyone, my name is Nada Ahmed and I'm your host for the Braving Innovation Podcast. I help businesses innovate and bring new products and services to market. I believe every company and team can achieve immense success in creating sustainable and profitable business models. All you need is an agile leadership mindset to build powerful, high-performing teams, get access to proven tools and strategies for impactful growth, and the ability to get the right mentors and investors on board. In this podcast, I want to help you with all of that. So I will be bringing you inspiring stories, tips, and strategies from leaders all around the world so that you can excel on your journey as an entrepreneur, innovation leader, and investor. Welcome to Braving Innovation. Hi, everyone. Thank you for being here. And today, I actually have a very special podcast for you. This is a recording of a podcast that I did a few months ago. And in this podcast, actually, I was being interviewed. And this was by the talented podcast host Gary Nowak on his podcast called Wish I Knew. You should check that out on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. And Gary is just so inspiring. He is a leadership coach, and I really learned a lot from him as a podcast host on how to ask deep and meaningful questions from your guest and actually really drive the conversation so that it is inspiring. So hope you enjoy it. I really enjoyed this conversation. This is your opportunity to learn a little bit more about me. So I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to another episode of Wish I Knew, a podcast where I speak with people about their careers, focusing on their success, advice, mentoring, and listening to their really interesting stories. I'm your host, Gary Nowak. And no doubt you'll love my conversation with an extremely interesting global traveler, Nada Ahmed. Career background, grew up in Pakistan and has lived in the UK, Paris, Virginia, Houston, and is currently in Norway. Started her own nonprofit for children in Pakistan, TCF Norway, in 2015. Prolific on LinkedIn, she's kind of a star in Oslo. Spent the last 10 years in Oslo, Norway, VP of Digital and Transformation, Digital Innovation Manager on the board for Digital Leadership Community. A lot of digital going on with Nada. Highlights: looking for a job that would enable travel. Studying in Hong Kong for the last 2 years of high school. Why not be a doctor? The power of a liberal arts school. Don't know what you want to do with your life? Be curious and explore. As a 16-year-old, got a scholarship for the United World College. Get courage at an early age, and this will give you confidence. Leveraging a low point in her career to find her voice. Following your intuition, how important that is. Studying in France for a year, the best year of her life. Taking the complicated and making it easy to understand. Advice on public speaking. Seek failure. I know, interesting, right? Setbacks are progress in disguise. That's a good one. Setbacks are progress in disguise. I love that. Feedback needs to be a dialogue, not just a one-way street. Living in Norway, the gardens of Paris, hidden gems all over the place. Okay, enough of my voice. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Nada Ahmed. Nada, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. Really excited about this one.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you, Gary.
And when you say here, where is here for you?
Yeah, so here I am in Oslo, Norway. I have been actually in Norway for almost a decade.
Really?
Yes. I said a few years, but it's actually a decade.
Okay, so I always start with, what was your very first job? However, I can't leave this topic. How did you get to Norway and from where?
Yes, I was working in Houston. That's where I did my master's. My parents lived there. And I, from a very young age, I was always curious and wanted to travel and go to different places. So I was looking for a job that would get me to travel. So I always wanted to work for a multinational or like a European company. So I got a job at a Norwegian company in Houston. You know, I was working in the energy sector. Norway's big in energy and oil and gas. And so I started working for this Norwegian company called DNV. And within a year, they asked me if I want to work in their office in Oslo. and also was so exotic for me because I've, you know, grown up and lived in places that have been the exact opposite in terms of weather, terrain. And so I said, yeah, I'm ready for that adventure. I never thought I would live someplace so cold, but here I am 10 years later.
Okay, I cannot deviate from my podcast too much. So I have to ask you, what was your very first job?
So my first job was working, a summer job working at Baskin Robbins, scooping ice cream.
Yeah.
In the US, my parents were in St. Louis at that time. So I got really good at scooping ice cream and eating a lot of ice cream.
What was your favorite?
Mint chocolate chip.
Classic.
Yeah.
Did you ever get sick of it?
I did, I think by the end.
How long was the end?
I was there usually for the summer, so 2 months.
Okay. So it wasn't like 2 years, you know?
Yeah, it was like a 2 months I would do it, yeah. I also worked at the university. I worked at the kitchen at this restaurant that we had, restaurant/bar. And so I also made like really unhealthy food for people.
Yes, of course. Where was this? Was this St. Louis?
This was in Richmond, Virginia. So I went to University of Richmond for my undergrad.
You've done some traveling.
Yes.
I've already heard Houston. I've already heard Richmond. And I've already heard Oslo.
I grew up in Pakistan.
Okay.
And then when I was 16, I went to study abroad in Hong Kong. So I did 2 years there. Then I came to the US. So that's Virginia. And then when I was studying in the US, I studied abroad in Paris for a year. So I've been to quite a few places.
Favorite place?
Paris.
Why?
Typical. No, I am a Francophone. I studied French in college. I just fell in love with the culture, the city, and like really as a student being there at that age, studying abroad, not really having a lot of academic responsibility, but just being there and really embracing the culture and living it, going to the museums and just the whole artsy side of it. And it's small and pretty and has so much history.
So many different places. What is there a hidden gem in Paris that you want to tell the audience about?
I have a lot of favorite places. The Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, the Sacré-Cœur. Like, it's hard to pinpoint one or two.
Anything that was off the beaten path that you just said, you know what? Nobody knows about this, but man, is this a great, great aspect of Paris.
Paris has a lot of gardens. So, you know, there's like Jardin de Luxembourg that everyone knows about, but in every little arrondissement, you have your own gardens that you can go to and, you know, just sit out and enjoy the sun. So I really like that part.
That's what makes Paris so great. Okay. So I wanted to touch back on your desire to go global, and you have Pakistan, Hong Kong, Virginia, Paris, Houston, Oslo. So what do you think is in you that made you want to travel all that? Is it just a curious nature of who you are?
I would say that I think a lot of it is curiosity. I mean, I grew up in Pakistan and always had this desire to travel, but being a Pakistani, it's not so easy. One, it's expensive to leave the country. Second, not many people accept Pakistanis. Like, it's hard to get a visa. So I knew it would be easier to go as a student academically. So I made my way there. And I think a pivotal moment there was when I applied to Hong Kong and went to school there. No one in Pakistan goes to study in Hong Kong. People go to the UK or they go to the US. That's where all the big universities are. And this was for my last 2 years of high school. I was so impatient that I couldn't wait till university. So I found in the newspaper an ad for you can study abroad for your last 2 years of high school. So from when I was 14, I like started researching on what I needed to do to be able to get this scholarship at 16. So when I got that, I didn't know much about that school, but it's a very special kind of school, which is called a United World College, where you get 16-year-olds from all around the world to come and study together. And I think that builds this unique curiosity in me as I was roommates with people from Israel, from Jamaica, from South America, from all around the world. And I hadn't been exposed to that before and just opened up my mind as I became best friends with people from very remote areas in the world. And I wanted to explore more.
So at 14, you're already thinking about college and getting out and carving your own path. What's driving that? Or what was your inspiration? Or was there an influencer there or a mentor or somebody?
It was definitely my I think at 13, I realized I was a woman. It was very limiting to be a woman in Pakistan. So I had a lot of ambition. I think if you were to attribute that to someone, it would be my mom. She was also a very ambitious woman in Pakistan. And she always told us, yes, you're a woman, but you can do whatever you want. And she said, I'm going to have the same rules for you as your brother. But as I grew older, she realized and I realized that wasn't quite possible in Pakistan. And I think that built in me this kind of angst that the world was not fair. I could not do whatever I wanted to do. So I wanted from a very young age, this liberty to really live my best life and not feel limited by my gender. So I think I've always had that drive in me that's propelled me forward to go to places where I can be free.
Wow, great story. So your mom is your inspiration and your influencer and major part of your life. How good is that?
Definitely. I think she's had a big role to play.
So I like to walk through the career. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start? Gosh, darn, you got so many good places to go to. How did you choose what you wanted to major in? What's that path look like for you? And then just walk through the career.
So my career trajectory wasn't very linear. From a very young age, one thing I knew I wanted to do was to be able to go and study abroad and have that freedom, as I said. So that was my goal. And then along the way, I had some people who influenced me. I had an uncle who was a doctor in the US. So he came to visit once, I think. And he said, be a doctor. Like, that's your path to success in life. And I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a doctor. And at that point, I had no one other idea of what my strengths are, what I could do. So I started working towards that. I was good in sciences. I studied biology. I liked it. I enjoyed it. So once I made it to the US, which was sort of my goal up till that point, that, okay, now I'm here, I realized there were a lot of other things I was interested in. And luckily, the school I got into was a liberal arts school. So that really allowed me to experiment. And I'm so, so grateful that I did that. And I really got to embrace humanities. Otherwise, I think I would have really stuck to, I think, South Asian families. They put a lot of pressure in the sciences and getting like that stable career. And I definitely had that from my dad's side. When I told him I'm majoring in French, I remember the conversation I had with him, and he said, what are you going to do with that? How is that going to help you? And I said, I'll figure that out. It doesn't mean I still can't be a doctor. I can still major in French. And that's the liberty of a liberal arts school. You can do that. I did that, but I graduated. I applied. I still did my pre-med requirements. I applied to medical schools. And I say now, luckily, I didn't get in anywhere. And you could say partly maybe because I didn't try hard enough, because I got distracted and I had so many other things that I was interested in. And I realized, well, if you really want to be a doctor, it's not easy. You have to put your all into it. And I think along the way, I eventually did get into one school and they deferred it for another year. And they said, you can come in for the next year. And I was like, by that time, I had accepted that I wasn't going to be a doctor, and that wasn't a defeat, that was just a sign that I'm not meant to be a doctor.
But you didn't have all the, going into that decision, you didn't know the breadth and depth of everything that was out there. So you listened to, I think you said your uncle who was a doctor, and he's like, doctor, of course that's what you want to do. And you said, yeah, doctor sounds good. So now you're getting into Virginia with all these different options. Your eyes are wide open now. And you're saying, hey, French major sounds good. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think thinking back, what surprises me is I was in college and I had a career counselor and I had a professor who was responsible, you know, for me. But I never really had that dialogue with anybody on what my options are. They asked me what I wanted to do. I said a doctor and they said, okay. Like, I feel it was, I didn't get exposed early on to other options are. So I wonder what universities can do there.
Well, let's talk about that, because when I was looking, when I came back to the US from Australia to go and work in academia and work in career counseling, and I just started doing the numbers of, you have a staff of 10, 12, looking after thousands of young people. I thought, how could I have an impact with so many people to work with and provide a custom approach to their career? So it sounds like you walk in, what do you want to do? I want to be a doctor. Okay, great. It was never expanding your horizon. So I guess, what's the advice for young people that don't know what they want to do? Because boy, it's prevalent. with people that are going to university. What's your advice for them?
So I would say explore as much as you can. And for me, it was my uncle at that point, and I was fixated on that. But really take that opportunity to not only talk to the professors, because it's not like the professors know about the West opportunities out there because their career has been academia. So I guess maybe to some extent, it depends on where your university is located and the exposure it has. Maybe some universities have a better system than others, but it would be reaching out to your network and talking to them about what they're doing and forming these early mentors that I didn't. I really understood mentorship later on in my career and how important that was.
And you mentioned early, you said you were very curious, and that seemed to serve you well in this instance, because what you just said is so many young people have a difficult time reaching out to other people for advice. This is what I would call informational interviews that you would have with people. It's like, hey, what's out there? What do you do? Why do you do it? What are the key characteristics? So one of your key traits, I thought, was being very curious. And that's why you wanted to travel. So you put that into place. I mean, that's case in point, exhibit A of your being curious inside of university to say, hey, what else is out there other than being a doctor? But great advice, because it can be intimidating for young people to reach out to somebody in any profession that's at a higher level. How can somebody get past the angst of trying to do that? Or was it natural for you?
So I would say for me, it was easier and natural because I'm an extrovert. So I have a brother who's an introvert, and sometimes I talk to him and he's, yeah, going to social settings makes me very, very nervous. And when he said that, I was so surprised. And I said, I don't think twice about it. But I don't think it's always been that case. I think when I first moved to the US, for example, it wasn't intimidating for me. I didn't feel like my English was always good enough, or everyone else felt so much more confident because I was still new in the country. But it's, I think for me, it's always been overcoming that fear and doing it anyways. It's scary, but doing it anyways. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. So it's not so much, I say people overvalue confidence. And I think more than confidence, what we need at an early age is courage. And then you will build up confidence.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. One of my podcast guests, Lois Jeffers, said, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And she's coming from the DEI space, diversity, equity, inclusion. And I thought, boy, is that a good quote, is get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You should push your boundaries a little bit. Okay. Sorry, I pull you off track. You were going on such a good road and then I deviate the guess. So shame on me. So going through university, you're trying to figure things out. You become a French major and you're in the US and you said you remember the conversation. Was it with your folks?
With my dad, yes. Mm.
Yeah, with your dad. What was that reaction? Or I think you hinted like, I could still do anything I want, but that took a lot of courage to say, I want to be a French major, going from the family thinks you're going to be a doctor to a French major. Obviously, nothing wrong with either, but it's, boy, is that a deviation from that path.
Yes. And it was, the decision was sort of, I initially went to Paris just for a semester. And I remember being there the first day with another student. And she said, well, I'm staying for a year. And I was so jealous. I said, is that possible? And right away, I called my counselor, my study abroad counselor. And I said, I want to change it to a year. And I was only there for one day. And it was just like a spontaneous decision. And that's maybe a little bit of who I am, that I do follow my intuition. Though over the years, I've learned that the work environment has told me to not follow my intuition and be more logical and rational, because that's rewarded. And I feel like now I'm at a space where I've worked for over 14 years, that I'm actually tapping more into my intuition and learning a lot more from it. And I feel like I had lost in touch with that.
Because it wasn't rewarded. Nobody was saying, hey, follow your gut, basically. What does your intuition say? And now you're leaning more into your intuition, your gut feel, if you will, rather than the logical steps, because that's interesting.
Hmm. And I think those are some of the best decisions I've made. Like going, back to that point when I decided to be a French major and study abroad for a year, it is by far my best year that I've had. I had so much fun, so much I learned in terms of also gaining self-confidence, being out there trying to learn. And I was very, very motivated and committed to learning French and every day failing at it, but getting better. I mean, imagine what that does to your confidence to learn a new language, because you have to really show up vulnerable and try to talk when you know you're going to say it wrong.
Especially French, that really value proper pronunciation and the etiquette around it. So early on, you followed your intuition.
Yes, early on I did.
Okay.
Early on I did. And I think along the way, as I was saying, I think mostly in my sort of corporate journey, I feel like it's not rewarded, it's not promoted. And I think that's something that I'm speaking up a lot about now, is that to create an environment that's more inclusive, especially for women, we need to value also other traits like intuition, more perception, collaboration, empathy, and not only traits like structure and analytic skills and all of that.
This has been my mantra of it's your soft skills. It's your intangible assets that are going to get you further. So you mentioned you're speaking up now. What does that mean for you? Is there something that you're doing to get your voice out there?
So this has, again, been a conscious decision for me over the past 3 years, in which I realized that I need to find my voice and get myself heard more. And this is, again, going back a little bit into my intuition and trusting what I have to say. So I've deliberately tried to be more out there in terms of LinkedIn. So if you follow me there, you'll see I started posting videos. And this was really, I started doing this when I was maybe at a lowest point in my career. I just changed jobs and I found myself in a place where I felt like I wasn't adding any value. And I had just had my son, my first kid. And I went through this sort of internal process of feeling like, well, I have to be more than a mother. And I am ambitious and I have to have a successful career. And here I am, I just changed jobs and I just didn't feel like I was going anywhere. And that's where I started this internal journey of really trying to understand what are my strengths, what am I good at, and how I can use that to get me to my next job. And one of the things that I've always loved to do is public speaking. I wouldn't say I've always been good at that, except for maybe when I was a kid, I had more courage and I was less cautious. So I was always like raising my hands and being part of the debate team and giving speeches. And then over time in my teenage years, I think I stopped doing that as I became a little bit more self-aware. When I came to the US, I didn't feel as confident. And then now when I found myself in this point, I felt like I had to try something different. And I also had to go back into what I really wanted. And I've always wanted to speak up more and be better at public speaking and inspire others, because I listen to a lot of TED Talks and I follow all these speakers who are so inspiring. And I want to be able to give other people that inspiration. And so I just started doing that. I had a very small following on LinkedIn at that point. I just started making small clippets of videos and people started commenting and encouraging me. A lot of people were encouraging me to do that more.
What were the topics? What did you want to talk about?
So I kept it to topics that I was working with. So it would be technology. It would be digitalization, what you need to do to succeed in digital transformation, basically. Or it could be topics like what was going on in tech at the moment. So Facebook was under a lot of pressure because of Cambridge Analytica. So I did a video on that. And so whatever was ongoing at work that I could use to just make a snippet of video so that it wasn't extra work, but I was also practicing talking about it and explaining it in simple terms to a wide audience.
Why did you choose video? Did you consider like blogs? Or I guess you said you like public speaking, so this is just a way. And just an observation is that's very intuitive to want to do that. So you're hitting a low point. You said you had your first child. It's okay. But that's not, I wouldn't call that logical or linear. You're like, you know what? I'm going to follow my heart and my gut. So I might challenge you that you've lost that, because I think that sounds very intuitive on your part to say, I got to get my voice out there. And you pick a form like LinkedIn, which is great. And you start posting.
Yeah, you're right. I think maybe that's when I get more in tune with my intuition, is when I am at my lowest point. And I felt like I had to do something different. And it was a way for me to get noticed and network and get a new job. I mean, that's how I started doing it. And now it's become something. Now LinkedIn came out with the live feature. So now I'm going the next level, because I started with just recordings. And then now I'm doing live videos. And I find that to be a lot of fun, because then I get to really prep what it's like to actually be on stage without a script. What do you say then? And these are on topics that I'm learning about. So this summer I picked up a book and I started talking about that. And I was just surprised of how much depth I got into the topic because of me doing that.
And has it been successful being on LinkedIn for you?
For me, it's been very successful. So in Oslo is a small city. When I would go to conferences or events, people would just recognize me because they've seen me, my videos. So they would know my name and they were like, oh, I know you.
How good is that?
And maybe the last time I met them was 2 years ago, but they remember me because they keep on seeing my videos. So in terms of networking, it's been great. In terms of, I would attribute actually a lot of my success to putting myself out there and having a good profile and talking about what I know, what I'm good at. And because I also realize that no one will know until you tell them what you know and what you're good at.
So don't wait to be asked. Get your message out there. And this was a form for you to look for another job as well. Okay, I got to get my voice out there. And you took a topic that's pretty deep, digital. That's very topical. It's very fast moving. I would imagine there's heaps of information to come in. So as part of your traits or your success, is that your natural ability to take things in, to put it through your head and your filter and then come out with the perspective?
I would think so. I like putting complicated topics into layman terms for everyone to understand. So that's always been my strength. I work with carbon capture and storage early on in my career. And that's where I really started explaining the topic to people in very simple terms, something that was very complicated. And I realized not everyone understood when I told them that's where I worked with. And I understood the value of being able to do that. And so now I go and present to the board. And even to them, I think a lot of people don't realize how you need to simplify the details and really present the big picture. And I've gotten this feedback last time I presented to the board that, wow, you were so good. And I didn't like going in there and presenting. I just felt like I was doing what I always do. But just getting that feedback from the CEO that, wow, you really blew everyone away. I realized how I've worked with this over the years and gotten really better at it.
So what's your advice to people on public speaking? I mean, between death and public speaking always wins out, right? People are less afraid to die. So what's your, do you have a tip or a something that you do that you've learned over the course of your career?
I think a lot of it has to do with just going out there and doing more, just raising your hand every time and say, okay, I'll present. I remember the first time I gave a presentation, this was at my master's program where for our thesis, we had to present and my voice was shaking and I was sweating. I was so nervous. And now it's a breeze because since that point to now, I've given thousands of presentations. So every time you give a presentation, you gain confidence. And so that's really it. And today I believe it's easier because you can go present live on Instagram, on LinkedIn, and it is an audience. It might be one or two people, but the more you do that, the better you will get.
So practice, practice, practice. I've told people, just record yourself and rewatch it. And you can critique yourself because once you see what others see, it's easier for you to point out like, oh, I've got to work on this, or I got to pause here more, or I didn't like that. So you don't even have to show it to anybody. You can just look at it yourself and self-criticize. But I agree. I think you touched on two things that I've tried to leverage. One is practice. The other is just confidence in the material, really knowing what you want to talk about.
Yeah. And can I just pick up on what you said? I think a lot of people cringe at listening to themselves.
Guilty.
And I used to be the same. And I realize I'm not anymore. And I think a lot of it is because I'm not going for perfection. So it's also realizing that, yes, you will make some mistakes. And yes, you will say things that maybe you could have said better. But that's why you have to do more of it so that you keep on getting better and honing in on your message.
Exactly. You get comfortable in your own skin. You get comfortable with your own voice. I think somebody said that I had a voice for, because one of the, I didn't want to do podcasts because I don't like the way I sound, really. Yeah, I don't know that too many people do like the way they sound unless you're Will Arnett or somebody. So yeah, and now it's just comfortable because I do my editing. I listen to myself. Yeah, yeah, it's my voice. No, not great, not terrible. It is what it is. And you move on.
Yeah, you exactly. You get over it. It's get past your ego. It's a little bit of that.
So we've been talking about advice. Have you ever been given advice that stuck with you?
So I have met two or three advice that I really hold dear to me. So if it's okay, I could talk about them. So one of them is really from my mom, who said to me at my first job out of my master's program, it was 2009 and a big crash. And yeah, just wasn't very easy to get a job. So I just took the first job I got. And I was miserable. And my mom said to me, you're going to be spending most of your life, most of your day working. It has to be something you enjoy. So that's always stuck with me, that I have to get joy from my work. It can't just be a place where I just go and it's okay, or I'm not happy. So that stuck with me every job I am at, that I need to be having fun and I need to make it fun for me.
Love it.
And another one is something that my coach always asks me, and it's a great advice, is why is this happening for you? So I just love asking myself that question whenever I feel I'm a little bit stuck or something's happened and it feels unfair, and just thinking, well, why is this happening for me?
What's the opportunity and what's happening? Flip it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you have a coach. That's good to hear.
Yes. Yes. Oh yeah. And I'm so thankful that I made that decision.
Oh, good. What went through your mind on that decision? Because that's obviously where my career is going. I'm studying to be an executive coach. What's your perspective on that?
So this was for me, as I mentioned, when I was at my lowest point in my career, I knew I wanted to do more with my life. I had ambitions and I just felt stuck. And I'd heard about some people having a coach, but I didn't know how to get one, what it meant. I knew it was expensive. And I spoke to one coach and I just ended up feeling really bad afterwards. And I was like, oh, that's not what I want. Then I saw on LinkedIn.
What made you feel bad?
Because he was criticizing me. This was our first meeting. And he was saying that, well, I'm not looking him in the eyes. I'm very insecure. I'm this, I'm that. And I'm like,
wow,
you don't even know me yet.
Yeah. Wowzers.
So it didn't feel very good. And I was like, okay, this is not the kind of coaching I need. And so I found on LinkedIn, I saw a lady, she had a tagline on LinkedIn which said, helping women in male-dominated environments. And I said, that's exactly what I need, because I feel stuck as a woman in a male-dominated environment where masculine values are valued. And I want to show up in my femininity as a woman and still be valued. And that's exactly what she was focused on. And it's one of the best decisions I've made.
That's great to hear. So we've got mom giving you good advice on the joy of work. We've got your coach giving you advice on why is this, what is the happiness for you? Is that the quote?
No, the quote was, why is this happening for you?
Why is this happening for you? And was there a third? You said a couple, was there one more or?
Yeah, there was one more. Actually, this advice I heard, I think from a video, someone said, focus on being effective, not on being right. And often I've felt at work as a leader, we try to always wanting to be, no, but my idea was the right one, or I was right. But realizing, no, that's not my focus. My focus is getting it right, not on being right.
So Susie DiStefano, again, another reference to a previous podcast, she said, focus on getting it right, not being right. And I was just, okay. And Katie Harris came out with critical thinking of, fall in love with the customer's problem, not with your solution. And too many people get caught up in themselves and love, oh, this will be the best product ever. And everybody's going to say, no, you got to solve the customer's issue. And if you could do that, then they'll like it. You can't force people to like something. So what advice do you give people? And do you mentor?
So the advice I give people is believe in miracles. So it seems a little bit like, but it's believe in your dreams and don't let go of them too early. Figure out what is it that you really want and just go for it and see what happens. And I say that because it's happened for me. I've had people I've really looked up to. In Norway, for example, there's this one woman, a businesswoman who's very well known, a lot in the media. And I also run a nonprofit on the side, and I had a dream that, I would love to have her come to our fundraising dinner. Imagine how much that would attract. And the ambassador to Pakistan, she was like, I know her, I'll ask her. And there she was. And so over the years, we've been connected and she's followed me. And now she's launched this new platform and she's asked me to be on her platform, giving advice to young people every Monday morning. And 5 years ago, I couldn't even imagine that this would happen to me. And now it's just, okay. So dreams do come true. So you just have to put them out there.
Go big with dreams. I tell young people, don't put your goal, no goal is unattainable. Put it out there.
Yeah. Let me see if there was any other one. Yeah. Another advice.
Lay it on me.
That I like to give. Be careful who you seek advice from and get feedback from.
Explain that.
So, because if you don't know who you want to be and you're getting advice from the wrong people, if that's not the kind of person you want to be, and they're giving you feedback based on what they think is the best for themselves or someone who's not like you. So you don't need to take advice from everybody, but value advice from people who you really look up to. And that's the kind of leader you want to be. That's the kind of profession you want to be in.
Just because you're getting advice from somebody doesn't mean you have to take it. And because I run into this quite a bit of, you shouldn't get advice from somebody you don't respect. I was like, you don't have to use it. You can just understand what their perspective is of you and see how they're thinking about it rather than, and that's some of the guilt I had with maybe asking for advice. I always felt like I had to implement it because that to me was very linear. Well, if they gave me advice, I have to follow it. No, you don't. You have to understand what their perspective is. It may not fit you and you can take it and do with it what you want. And you don't always have to absorb the feedback or the criticism in a way that doesn't suit you. So yeah, I think we're saying similar things because I might, if you're having a confrontation with somebody or somebody just rubs you the wrong way, sometimes it might be good to go get feedback from that person and see what their perspective is and be a bit more empathetic. Just say, that's how you're perceiving my actions. That's really interesting. Because I'm trying to project one thing and you're seeing it completely different. Not that you want to change their perspective. It's just recognition of, some people can see me in this light. That's interesting. And I've just noticed it recently. I'll come off and I know I'll rub people, but hopefully a majority of the people think that what I do is it's fun and it's just in jest. And I'm just trying to have a good time throughout my life, throughout my career, throughout my podcast. And if it rubs somebody, then you know what? That's their issue or hang up. That's not mine because I'm pretty comfortable with my sense of humor, let's say, or lack of sense of humor. So yeah, that's good.
And I think I would elaborate on that because when you do put yourself out there the way you are, the way I do on LinkedIn, you will get criticism and people will maybe say things that might hurt you. But that's the risk, right? And then that's then being able to understand, okay, what kind of feedback do I want to listen to? Because this is something that I also talk a lot about is a feedback at work, that there's a lot of pressure that we should have a very open culture. We should give feedback. But sometimes I believe managers feel entitled as if they're the only ones who hold the truth. So feedback really needs to be a dialogue. It needs to be, this is how I'm seeing it. How are you seeing it? So as a manager, you could say, I don't feel like you were being proactive. Someone reporting to you, I would feel like, you always end up taking over my work. So I feel like I need to step back because maybe that's what you want is you want to take over.
I like that.
So it has to be more of a dialogue. And as a manager, being humble that I'm not the only one who holds the truth in this situation. Let's see what your perspective is. And it's not about fixing people. It's about understanding the situation.
Let that soak in for a little bit. I like that. It's not about, say that again.
It's not always about fixing people. I mean, there might be some people that you might have to fix. I talk about this strongly because I think it also impacts diversity at work. Because if you want more diversity at work, you have to accept people doing things differently and showing up in a different way. But if you're always giving them feedback that I want you to show up like this, I want you to do this and this and this, then how do you expect them to show up in their own unique way? So we have to be cautious.
Well, it's embracing what they bring, not what they're not bringing. And too many people focus on now this is the cookie cutter approach to the way we do things, which just brings me back. And I've come back to it twice now with your intuition, because it just feels, I don't know where you've lost it. Is it in the guardrails of your job or?
So So I wouldn't say I've lost it. I think I've definitely come back to it now, and I'm definitely more in my intuition element. And I think working with my coach has definitely helped with that. But I would say in a way, the work environment is structured in a way that we don't promote some of the feminine values, and intuition could be one of them. And not saying that these are only values that women have, but men have them too. But how do we make room for exploring? You know, and that's where you've also picked up on the curiosity, right? How do you make room for curiosity at work?
Yeah. Yeah, it's massive because intuition can't always be backed up. And that's the issue with something you have to justify. Well, it's a gut feel. Nobody can make decisions on.
Let's explore it.
Yeah, right. Let's explore it. Let's not discount it. Well, let's wrap some facts around this, or let's put more rigor to it.
Let's add data to it. So I'm not saying you don't make decisions based on data.
So I know we briefly touched on about setbacks. Has there been like one setback that came through that at the time felt devastating that turned out to be impactful?
So early on, I spoke about how I didn't get into a medical school. And at that point, you could view that as a failure, but I think it was also a very strong indication for me that's not what I'm meant to do. And actually my curiosity and my need to travel the world and learn new languages and understand different cultures, I wouldn't get that in that career.
So a doctor's anchored.
Yes. Yeah. If I do my medical school in the US, I need to stay in the US. I can't travel as much. So in a way it was a failure, but I think I didn't really see it as a defeat. And I just took it as, okay, what's the next big thing for me to do? And I am someone who's ambitious, who always tries, who takes risks. So I try to always go for the next big job, apply for it. So I have failed many times where I've gotten rejected from jobs because I've applied to a lot of jobs. But at the same time, because I applied, I did also succeed. So my motto has always been seek failure. There's nothing wrong with failure. It's more of a stepping stone. It tells you something about what you need to improve on. So very early on, I told you I won a scholarship to go study in Hong Kong. Right before I did that, I applied for another program. This was organized by the US Embassy in Pakistan on doing a summer program with NASA and going, I don't know if it was Houston or Florida for the summer. And I applied for that and I failed at the interview because they asked me a question and I lied in my response and it was very obvious. And that made me realize, well, I can't do that at an interview. And so the next time for my next job, I realized I have to be completely honest about what I can do and what I cannot do. And if I didn't have that experience, I wouldn't have gone to Hong Kong, right? So something in that failure, you learn something that will help you in your next big thing that you will apply for. So it's really not failure because you're applying. I feel I will always then search for bigger and bigger challenges. And it's more of a learning. And it's actually setbacks are progress in disguise. You don't see it that way, maybe right away, but now I can see it.
It takes time. That's why a career, when you're in the moment, you just see all these rejection letters and you're not getting internships, you're not getting the job, another disappointment. That's building your character. And that's what it's happening. I think 2020, I remember talking to friends like, how are you doing? It's like, I'm building character. Oh, that sounds pretty deep. I said, yeah, it's not like a lot was going on, but, you know, just struggling every day. I was like, what am I going to do with my career? What's going on? And I came up with building character just because I thought that was a real positive outlook on what was happening. Not that things were terrible. So what are you most proud of?
So a few years ago, when my husband and I got married, I married a Norwegian, and it was difficult to get two very different cultures together, like a Pakistani family and a Norwegian. So it wasn't necessarily easy. But when we were finally able to make it happen and have the families be okay with it, it was time for us to, Frederick said, my husband, he said, well, I need to buy you a ring. And I was like, well, I don't really care about the ring. Can we put that money to a cause that we really care about? And he said, okay, what do we care about? And I said, well, I've always wanted to give back to Pakistan and give opportunities to other girls in Pakistan to get an education and possibly study abroad the way I did. And so from there, we gave birth to this idea of building a school in Pakistan. And we did that. We formed a nonprofit in Norway called TCF Norway. And right before the pandemic, we were in Pakistan to inaugurate the school where 200 girls and boys are who would otherwise not be in school are going to school in Pakistan. So that's really something I'm most proud of, that we were able to do that.
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
Because at that point, when I told him it's always been a dream to build a school, he said, well, why don't we do it now? Why do you have to wait for that? And I think we were just like, yeah, what are we waiting for?
Good question.
Let's just start. And we just formed a nonprofit, did some fundraising. A lot of people wanted to help us. That was sort of the major theme in our wedding, was that we're fundraising for this school, please donate. And people really opened up their wallets, and it was a lot of fun and just very energizing.
How great is that? Well done. You should be proud of that. That's fantastic. Love it. What does success look like for you going forward?
So I believe I'm at this point in my career where I am probably the most confident that I've been in myself and what I'm to offer. I spoke about my intuition, and I think that's really me believing in myself more and what I know. So I don't feel that I have to tie myself to a title or a job per se, but really I can do anything I want. So I wouldn't say I have it all planned out, but I feel like I'm at a very pivotal point now, that I'm really excited for what lies ahead, because I'm now ready to show up as who I am and not working to prove myself to anybody, not working to prove myself to myself, but doing what I really believe is going to make an impact in the world.
And your future, because you said you're trying to work your way back to the US, or?
Yes, at some point. Yeah.
So if you come back to the US, where would you go?
I think at this point, because my kids are young, I would want to be close to family, which is in Houston.
Okay.
And I think Houston's a nice city. It's big. There are lots of opportunities and a lot of places where I can make an impact.
Perfect. Well, I think you've done that already with your career. So congratulations. Do you have time for some fun questions?
Yes, we can have a go at that.
Okay. First one, not on the list, is what's it like to live in Norway?
It's hard to make that a short answer.
Take your time.
You have to learn how to ski.
Must. Skiing number one. Your kids, they ski?
It's a must. Skiing number one. My kids ski. You have to learn how to ski to really, because the winters are long, and cross-country ski. It's beautiful. It's beautiful because you go out in the mountains. There's just no one there and just the snow. And you're with your backpack and with your sandwich. And then you're just going for hours into this wilderness. And it's just a lot of fun.
Are there snowboarders in Norway?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are you a snowboarder?
I do. Well, I did. Yeah. When I moved to China, I stopped doing all that stuff. But yeah, I could only coordinate that. I could thought of two skis. No way. Anything else that stands out living there? So winters are long. You have to get on you have to enjoy the snow and embrace it.
You know, it's Scandinavia. So it's a very friendly place for families, for having kids. You get very, what's the word? Liberal. You get liberal maternity leaves and paternity leaves. So my husband gets 3 months he has to take or he loses it. I think it's 4 months now. And a total as a couple, we get 10 months full pay. And I can take a whole year if I get 80% pay. So in terms of having kids, people are very understanding. If you have to leave at four, most people leave work at four. So the work-life balance is great.
Yep. Yeah. Good. You're making a strong case to people to go live in that country if they want to start a family and get some work-life balance.
Yeah. Definitely. It's beautiful here.
Yeah. What's the population of Norway?
5 million.
Really? That's it?
It's the size of Houston.
Right. Houston's our fourth largest city, I think.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Fun questions. Favorite movie or book?
Favorite movie, Fight Club.
Never seen it. What'd you like about it? Your eyes got as big as saucers when you said that. It must be your favorite movie.
It's just something that we watched over and over again in college. One, because there was Brad Pitt in it, but also because it's just interesting. It makes you think about reality in many different levels.
And Ed Norton was in that movie, right?
Yes, Ed Norton was.
He's a serious actor, I think.
He's a serious actor, yeah. And it's a little bit funny too. He has humor too. And my favorite book is Brené Brown, Dare to Lead. Love that book.
Such an inspiration these days. Favorite meal?
Pakistani food.
Anything?
anything. I mean, I'm a vegetarian Pakistani food. I've been living in Norway, so I really miss home cooked meals. So whenever I go back to my mom's, I'm just like, just cook me food.
So what's an example of a typical Pakistani meal?
So Pakistani food is very similar to Indian food. So things like dal, biryani, butter chicken, you get all of that.
Okay. What's your favorite vacation spot?
So I don't have one vacation spot that I go back to because you've seen me. I'm curious. I like to go to new places, but I love going to places where they speak French because I speak French. So I've been to Corsica once and I just absolutely loved it. Anywhere else in France, I'd be happy to go to. Another place that I really like is Colombia.
Oh, why?
I did a summer there in Cartagena and I just fell in love with the music, the culture.
Any music concert, any artist dead or alive, who would you want to go see? And would you want to see them? Would you want to go back in time to see them if that were the case? Or would you want to bring them back to life and see them in a certain place?
I would want to go back in time and see them. And it's a Nirvana.
Oh, do you have a specific venue or?
I think just, I used to listen to them when I was in Pakistan. So Kurt Cobain died before I even started listening to them. But it's so anywhere really, I just know all the music so well and I just, you know, love it and would love to be on a concert with them.
So would you want to see them before they were really famous or after they're famous?
After they're famous.
Okay.
After Nevermind.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. So go back in time. I like that. Go back in time and go look at them. Okay. Some rapid fire questions. Do you have a favorite candy bar?
Snickers.
It's the right answer. Your go-to fast food restaurant. Do they have fast food in Norway?
Yes, they do. I'm not a big fan of fast food, but if I have to, it'll be, what's it called? Oh, my family loves it. What's that place in the South? Chicken.
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A. I don't do much fast food, so. But if I have to, I'll do Chick-fil-A.
Common answer. Do you have a favorite type of pizza?
Vegetarian.
Okay. What type of crust?
Thin crust, New York style. Yeah.
Favorite TV show?
Game of Thrones.
That's a good one. Do you have a favorite podcast?
I have a lot of favorites. I love Brené Brown's Dare to Lead. I've just started listening to Design Matters by Debbie Millman. And apparently it's been around. It's a TED podcast that's been around for the longest time. And I just started listening to it. And it's really good.
Cool. Your favorite time of year? What's the best month of the year?
It depends on where I am. In Oslo, it's definitely June, July. The summers are amazing. If I'm in Houston, it's probably November, December.
It ain't June or July in Houston, I can tell you that. I haven't been there. So you take a shower, 3 minutes later, I need a shower. It's horrible. Are you a cat or a dog person?
I like both. I've had cats. I've had dogs.
Good answer. Do you have a favorite holiday? Like, and I'm thinking New Year's or Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving.
What do you like about it? I love it too.
It's just the food, being able to get together. It's just that time of the year. And there's no, you don't have to buy gifts or any of that. It's just people getting together and eat good food.
And it's consistent. It's always on a Thursday. It doesn't change. And then you get the Black Friday and everything. And you can plan out your schedule. And if you're a sports person, you got 3 games on that day. Are you a morning or an evening person?
I'm a morning person.
What time do you get up?
5 a.m.
Okay. Well, it's early.
Now, this is something that I've gotten even more diligent at, is getting up at 5 a.m. And it's just been great.
Yeah. Way more productive in the morning. The evenings, you could, afternoon, after 1 p.m., count me out. I'm useless. Any broken bones?
No, actually. Never broken a bone.
Do you have a celebrity crush?
I think Brad Pitt.
I think that's, yeah, that would have been my guess for you. Although I don't know you, but you know, the Fight Club.
Fight Club.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Brad when Pitt, a young lady yeah. loves the Fight Club as her favorite movie, I'm like, holy moly.
It has to be Brad Pitt. Yeah.
Of the following 3, which would be your favorite smell? The first time I've asked it, would it be coffee, popcorn, or bacon?
Coffee.
Isn't that the great? Because you're a morning person, you get it, and just the smell of coffee. So between those 3, just the smell of it is, oh, I want it. Okay, final couple of questions. Dinner with anybody dead or alive, who would it be?
I think there are 2 people, Michelle Obama, mm-hmm. Brené Brown.
There's a theme to you.
And it's going to happen one day. It's going to happen one day.
What did you say? Believe in miracles, right?
Believe in miracles. I'm going to be on her podcast one day. Mark my words.
I believe you. I don't doubt it for a second. So with that, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as someone who made a difference for women in the workplace. It's something that I feel very strongly about because I've been through it, and I see over and over again women falling off from work. They've gotten technical degrees. They've graduated with tech, with engineering, with STEM, you name it. But then they come to the workplace and they drop out. And I don't think we're doing enough to keep women in the workplace. So if I could make a difference there, that's what I want to be remembered at.
Based on what I'm seeing, you're doing that. And you're doing that with your nonprofit in Pakistan. How great is that? Can't thank you enough for being on the podcast. I had a good time. Thank you.
Yes, this was a lot of fun. Thank you. You're so good at this, Gary.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, this was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to the Braving Innovation podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe so you do not miss any of our future episodes. Don't forget to leave us a review and share this podcast with others who might find it valuable. Thank you.